There's probably only a handful of people who can understand what is going on with EU criminal law, and I'm certainly not one of them. But I shall try. EU judicial cooperation is based on the principle of mutual recognition. Now, this means that judicial decisions taken in one country should automatically be valid and enforced throughout the others. So requests for arrest, extradition, requests for evidence, orders freezing assets, surveillance warrants, and so on. It is based on the principle of mutual trust. So never mind Council of Europe concerns about judicial standards in Italy, Greece, Portugal, or the 10 new EU countries. Our governments trust each other's legal systems. That's the main thing. Anyway, to put our minds at rest, the EU promised a twin-track approach to judicial cooperation on the one hand and the rights of suspects and defendants on the other. This was at the famous Tampere Conference. Well, since then, we have had 14 adopted EU framework decisions. This is binding EU criminal laws, not unlike federal laws in the US. And 13 more are currently being negotiated. This package includes the European arrest warrant, the European evidence warrant, a de facto European search warrant, terrorism, cybercrime, drugs, freezing of assets, and on and on and on. Mutual recognition will also bring us an EU criminal records database. Very reassuring. But more importantly, EU criminal law is bringing us a coercive criminal law orientated to the needs of the prosecution with few of the protections found at the national level. So what of the EU's promise to protect the rights of suspects and defendants? Well, we've had 27 measures that assist the police and the prosecution, and we've had 2 draft proposals on the rights of suspects and defendants. But these haven't been agreed because they're effectively meaningless. They don't go beyond the European Convention on Human Rights. Well, what's the problem? Well, quite simply, the right to a fair trial, supposedly guaranteed under the European Convention, is meaningless. If you've been extradited to a foreign country under a dodgy European arrest warrant, evidence has been seized from your home at the behest of a foreign magistrate, and you can't even find a lawyer who understands EU criminal law, let alone speaks your language. Okay, so on to the EU's war on terrorism. First, the framework decision on combating terrorism, which Steve spoke a little about. Now, this contains a common EU definition of terrorism. This was agreed in the space of a few months just after September the 11th. Now, before this time, less than half the EU countries even had counter-terrorism legislation. 3 months later, and all 15 European countries have a common definition. Soon, it will be 25 countries. And it is a very broad definition indeed. Criminal acts may be considered terrorist if they are committed with the intention of, and I quote, seriously intimidating a population, unduly compelling a government or international organisation to perform or abstain from performing any act, or seriously destabilising or destroying the fundamental political, constitutional, economic or social structures of a country or an international organisation, interestingly enough. Now, obviously, there are millions and millions of us who quite rightly want governments and international organisations such as the EU, the US, and the WTO to perform or abstain from many acts. Does that make us terrorists? Well, in response to criticisms about this very broad definition of terrorism, the EU made a declaration when it adopted the legislation that said the new law would not apply to demonstrations, trade unions, or other legitimate political activities. But declarations have no force in EU law, so it remains to be seen what's going to happen. One good indication came from the Spanish government, who enjoyed presidency of the European Union last year. They described a gradual increase at various EU summits and other events in violence and criminal damage orchestrated by radical extremist groups, clearly terrorizing society. These acts are the work of a loose network hiding behind various social fronts, by which we mean organisations taking advantage of their lawful status to aid and abet the achievement of terrorist groups' aims. Absolute nonsense. But there is a concerted attempt on the part of some governments, as Steve says, to create a link between terrorism on the one hand and the so-called anti-globalisation movement on the other. Okay, EU-US cooperation in the war on terrorism. First, we had the Europol-US agreement, which I've already discussed. The next set of agreements adopted last year covered extradition, mutual legal assistance, issues like the exchange of intelligence, personal data, the interception of telecommunications, joint investigation teams. The FBI is going to be allowed to work legally in Europe, the death penalty, and the International Criminal Court. All the negotiations were conducted entirely in secret. The European Parliament could only offer an opinion. It couldn't amend or change the text in any way. And the only place that the draft agreements were published was on the State Watch website. Now, the US was actually demanding from the EU that it be treated like a European arrest warrant state by EU member states. Now, 14 of the 15 EU countries told the US to piss off, basically. Britain, however, signed a bilateral extradition treaty, which does put the US on the same footing as the arrest warrant countries. Now, this treaty wasn't published until 2 months after it was adopted, at which point it became clear that the new treaty removes the requirement for the USA to provide prima facie evidence if it wants to extradite someone from Britain, but maintains the probable cause requirement in the US Constitution if the UK seeks to extradite US nationals. Put simply, this means the US requires evidence from Britain if we want to extradite someone, but we will make do with allegations from the US. Quite alarming. Okay, the EU terrorist lists. This is essentially a list of individuals and organisations who are illegal. Active or passive support of these organisations is also illegal. And then there is another list that bans financial transactions with groups and individuals suspected of financing terrorism. Now, the first EU terrorist list, which mirrored the United States and United Nations list, was adopted by written procedure on the 27th of December 2001, 2 days after Christmas. Now, this means that this list was just faxed round to the 15 foreign ministries and then becomes law if nobody objects. It's a legislative procedure usually used rarely for uncontentious policies, and it was no coincidence that they used it for this 2 days after Christmas. The terrorist list has since been amended 10 times, and there has been no parliamentary involvement or democratic debate whatsoever. The amendments closely follow the US decisions to ban certain groups and individuals. The list includes groups from the Philippines, Palestine, Sri Lanka, former Kurdistan. Obviously, many of us believe that these are legitimate liberation struggles against illegal occupations and repressive regimes. The list was last updated 2 days ago. 10 Italian groups are included for the first time, along groups like ETA and the IRA. And so what happens if you happen to get yourself on one of these lists? Well, the EU regulations have no mechanism for appeal against inclusion. You cannot challenge being on the list in your national court. So you have to wait perhaps 5 years for your grievance to reach the European Court of Human Rights, as a dozen people are currently doing. In the meantime, your bank account, any benefits and income can be frozen. One person who knows all about this is Professor Jose Maria Sison from the Philippines, someone who has enjoyed refugee status here in Holland for many years. He's in exile because he's the leader of the outlawed Philippine Communist Party. He has never been convicted of a terrorist offence. But he does have a way off the EU terrorist list. The US has said he will be removed from all lists if he denounces and ceases involvement with the Philippine Communist Party, and thus appeases a US client state. Okay, I've got three more things. I know it's quite technical and you all look a bit bored, but I'm going to crack on regardless. PNR, the so-called passenger name record data.